This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. If Facebook or Twitter tell you anything, it's that humans use their connections to climb the social ladder. And whether that social capital grants them a new friend or a dating opportunity or a job, it's all part of the way we survive. Ian Gilby might tell you that chimpanzees aren't much different. He studied chimps at Tanzania's Gombe National Park for the past 14 years, and he's seen how the art of cooperation and networking contributes to the prosperity of a chimp. Ian Gilby is a senior research scientist in the Department of Evolutionary Anthropology at Duke University and the co-director of the Jane Goodall Institute Research Center. And he joins us now to talk about social networking among chimps. Good to talk with you.
Yeah, good to talk to you, too. Thanks for having me on the show.
It is my pleasure. You focus on males, and you're looking lately at particularly at the coalitions they form. Tell us a little bit
yes.
about that.
Yes. Well, a coalition is when two individuals jointly direct aggression at another individual. So it's a form of cooperation, and cooperation has been one of the big puzzles in biology ever since Darwin, right? So nature is supposed to be red in tooth and claw, right? And so why would an individual do something that benefits somebody else, right? It seems counterintuitive. So a coalition is a good example of that because often it occurs when as an intervention. If you have two individuals who are in some kind of conflict and I as a third party have the opportunity to intervene, it seems odd that I would do so, to put myself in danger, get myself in the middle of the fray, right? But you see it happen in chimpanzees.
And it's interesting, too, because when we think about cooperation among animals and when we talk about it, it's generally in terms of those animals cooperating to somehow control their environment, maybe hunt, right? Or they do something together that benefits the whole group. But you're looking at what happens when the group has friction, tension within the group, and coalitions that form two against one or three against five, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it's a really fascinating dynamic that we have, on one hand, cooperation to defend their territory and in some cases to hunt for meat. But then also inherent in the system is competition also. So it's sort of how they manage the two of those that I find so fascinating.
So we know this in the business world. You might team up with some fellow employees, and if you can see where the chips are falling and whether or not it's going to benefit me, let's say, in my promotion, I might side with one group or another to see if I can get the promotion. Is that the kind of thing that's happening? Am I siding with I want to side with a winner? Is that what the chimps are doing?
You know, we're still trying to figure it out. My take on it is that chimpanzees ultimately act in their immediate self-interest, a lot of the time anyway. And so rather than thinking ahead to what it might mean for them to join and to form a coalition with somebody, it may be more about who they're promoting their own immediate dominance at that point. So, for example, we think about a coalition as, or it's traditionally thought of as, me helping somebody else. But you could also think of it as, well, it doesn't matter who I'm helping, but I'm actually targeting an enemy. So if I've got my enemy is in a fight with somebody, I can jump on that chance and knock him down. And as a byproduct, I'm helping the other individual, mm-hmm. but I don't really care who that chimp is.
So is this always, I assume there's an alpha animal here, an alpha chimp who's mm-hmm. involved. Is this always me deciding whether it's my chance to now beat the alpha or to somehow gain prestige within the troop?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there's lots of different ways in this could happen, for sure.
You talk about, you've got a funny story about a former alpha male named Goblin.
Mm, yeah.
Tell us about Goblin.
He's nicknamed the Kingmaker, and he was very, always known as being very political. And he became alpha male when he was 15, very young for a chimpanzee. And when he was eventually deposed, he was badly attacked and exiled for a while and came back. And then after that, he just started to essentially buddy up with the current alpha male. So he would always be by that alpha male's side, lots of grooming. Whenever that alpha displayed in a dominance display, Goblin would be right after him. And that was, it served two purposes. It served first to bolster Goblin's rank because he was always associated with this alpha male. And then it also potentially helped that alpha maintain his status because he was, you know, a team instead of just one individual.
He's alpha emeritus.
Right. And so one thing that was that worked out that's just fascinating with him, with Goblin, is that he was very fickle. As soon as the alpha male changed, suddenly he was best buddies with the new guy. And so my friend and colleague, Kristen Mosher, who is a professional photographer who lived at Gombe for years, has this fantastic picture of Goblin with his arm around the brand new alpha male, literally the day after he had been deposed. So.
Let's talk about this. If you want any advice, let me know. I'll be in my tree.
Exactly.
So is there any evidence that this coalition building, that the choice that a chimp might make will have an advantage in either mating or eating or any of the other things that we assume this calculation is based on?
Yeah, this is really exciting stuff, actually. We've recently shown, my colleagues and I have recently shown that males – position in a social network based on coalition formation is able – it predicts both his ability or likelihood of increasing in rank and also at a given rank, it increases his probability of fathering offspring. So there's an actual evolutionary fitness benefit to forming these coalitions. And this is something that has been suspected for years and years and years. And it's only really through using long-term data that we've been able to uncover this.
And you've noticed that that chimps will form networks. They have groups of people they chum or other chimps they chum around with more. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting connection that you've made. I think it's the betweens, right? Those who have friends in many groups and those who have a friend in only one group. And I assume that these groups are separated by their ability to dominate, where they are on the chain.
Well, as always, we're still trying to work this out. But yeah, I mean, we expected – this is the beauty of science, right? We went into it saying, okay, we're going to test whether or not coalition formation has reproductive advantages. And we suspected that it would be those individuals who had lots of coalition partners and or those that formed coalitions at a very high rate, very frequently. But instead, we found out that it was this measure called betweenness, which is this social network measure. And as you said, it's a male who connects separate subgroups. So one way I like to think about it is, I mean, you can't – you mentioned it at the beginning. You can't talk about social networks without bringing up Facebook, right? So if you have – imagine you have 100 friends, say, and they're all at Duke. Okay, so you've got a wide network, lots of people to cooperate with, lots of friends. But then you compare that to somebody else who also has 100 friends, but 33 of them are at Duke, 33 of them are at UNC, and then 34 or whatever are at State. You can kind of imagine that individual is in a more influential position than the one with just the friends in one institution.
So does that mean that these coalitions hold together? They're not strictly ad hoc, whoever had the biggest piece of meat that moment, created that coalition?
Well, see, this is where it gets tricky because we're basing it on coalition formation is really quite rare as well. So single events make a big difference. So it's difficult to characterize sometimes.
And what about then this whole business of meat eating and hunting, I guess, is part of how these coalitions form, but also networks form around grooming as well.
Mm-hmm.
Are they the same? If you're a grooming mate, are you likely to be a coalition partner?
We haven't done those analyses yet for Gombe, but in some other sites, wild chimpanzee sites, yes, that is the case, that coalition formation, meat sharing, grooming, just association are all tightly correlated with one another. And it's kind of hard to – and some great work has been done by professors like Joan Silk at ASU who has shown that there are fitness benefits to having long-term social bonds. But we're still not entirely sure how that works.
And again, this question of cooperation, we're talking about these coalitions that form along power lines within the group.
Yeah.
And then we think about, again, cooperation for defending territory and hunting. And here again, you've done some research that raises a lot of questions. We thought perhaps that chimps got together, and because we could see them in groups hunting together, looked to us like they were cooperating. You're suggesting that might not be what's going on all the time.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be very, very careful and test our hypotheses as we would if we were studying lions or wild dogs or something like that, where instead of jumping right in and thinking about sort of the complex social explanations for hunting, maybe, you know, or that they have to be working together, or there's a real goal in mind, like getting meat to share with an ally or to share with a female for mating, that it could be much more simple than that. And my work at Gombe has shown that it's really much more about individual success, and individuals are able to succeed on their own. And there's very little evidence that they're working together at Gombe.
Even though, coincidentally, they're all out there together.
Because, by the way,
that's where the monkeys are.
Yeah, and there are times when, you know, one individual is chasing a monkey and it happens to go into a tree where another chimpanzee is waiting. Was that on purpose?
Right.
Who knows?
And this business of meat sharing, this is interesting as well because, you notice that what you found at Gombe isn't always the case in other places.
Right.
So ecology plays a big part in determining whether it's cooperation or not and how these coalitions form as well.
Yeah, I think ecology is huge, and just differences among these groups can be explained by ecology. So, for example, if we think about coalition formation, there's an enormous group of chimpanzees in Uganda, in Kibali National Park, the Ngogo community. They have 180 plus chimpanzees in the group. Our group is only 60, so it's a huge difference. And there, it seems like coalition formation is a lot more prevalent. And it may be because when you've got 25 adult males in a group, you just can't do it on your own, and everybody has to have a coalition partner. With regard to hunting, at Gombe, it's a mosaic of evergreen forest in the valleys and deciduous woodland on the ridges. And in the woodland, it's quite easy, or much easier, for a male to catch a monkey by himself. You go out to West Africa. And in Thai National Park in Cote d'Ivoire, it's been reported that there chimpanzees are much more collaborative in capturing monkeys. And it's probably because the canopy is much more continuous. It's higher, and it's just impossible for a chimpanzee to catch a monkey on his own.
So they need to work more. So here's the interesting thing to me and the question I have for you. You can do the research and you can tell it was to that monkey's advantage, to that chimp's advantage, to side with this coalition partner over and against that one. And you figure that out. Now, the monkey doesn't have access to your research, nor does the chimp, I assume, sit down before the event and say, you know, here's how this is going to go. What's the mechanism? Can you tell what it is that drives the chimp? Is it just luck? You can only study the groups that survived and they got it right?
Yeah, I mean, natural selection chance is a big deal, and it's random drift. The truth is, from pure wild studies, it's hard to tell. We really don't know. I mean, we go to the field, it's impossible not to anthropomorphize. It's, you know, there are many times when we think, wow, that was definitely pre-planned and that there's a strategy there, right? But it's difficult to prove that, and it's difficult to test it in a rigorous manner in the wild. And so that's where captive work comes in. We have colleagues at Duke, Brian Hare, one of them, works in sanctuaries in Congo. With bonobos and with chimpanzees, and where you can conduct rigorous controlled experiments where you're really manipulating the variables so that you can really hone in on what the animals are actually capable of doing. But as I said at the beginning, what they're capable of doing doesn't necessarily mean that's what they are actually doing in the wild.
And just studying their behavior, you'd never know. It seems to me that here's where the neuroscience comes in, because we know we've got these networks and structures in the brain that allow us to carefully calculate the outcome.
Right.
If I side with this guy, it's going to turn out, I mean, I might be wrong, but we know how that works.
Right.
And so the question is, do chimps have that kind of structure? Do they have the biological capacity to make a calculation along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been shown that they have the capacity for at least rudimentary calculations of that type. But it's how much of that is actually driving the cooperation that we see in the wild, that's the question.
So tell us a little bit about the Jane Goodall Institute Center. What do you do?
Oh, this is great. Yeah, I am in a really fortunate position to be working with Ann Pusey, who is the director of the center, who was my PhD advisor. And now she and I co-direct this Jane Goodall Institute Research Center. And it's located at Duke. And we are the proud custodians of all of the long-term data that have come out of Gombe National Park since Jane Goodall set foot there in 1960. So, starting in the early 70s, there have been daily follows that have been conducted by Tanzanian field assistants, and these guys are amazing. They know more about chimps than we ever will. But they're out there every day following chimps, writing down detailed information systematically. Hmm. We also have video, we have photographs, we have they have over a million locations where they record the location on a map every 15 minutes, and so we have all these data sitting in our filing cabinets, and then Professor Pusey has led a 20-year project to digitize all these data.
I was going to say, you should get a computer. They've got the hard drives on there and save space.
Yeah, so we've got a lot of this data has been digitized, and the basis for our research is incredible.
Sounds great. Ian, what a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so
indeed.
Much.
Thank you.
Ian Gilby, senior research scientist in the Department of Evolutionary Anthropology at Duke and co-director of the Jane Goodall Institute Research Center. That's our program for today. Thanks very much. You can find us at stateofthings.org. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.